is on the left-hand page. These are left-hand pages. The moment they are written, they will not exist. That is, they will not exist as themselves, as they were first conceived. What is withheld is on the back of a leaf. I have withheld more than I have written. I have restrained more than I have given. I have left unsaid more than I have said. I have withheld much more than I have withheld. Even these pages have already created their own left-hand page, as will be seen. I will have added for clarification or withdrawn some detail. I will have paused the structure of the sentence and the meaning of the sentence and reformulated it to resolve some understanding that was tentative in the first place, but that merely for the sake of agreeing to a rule of syntax, I have to present as certain. Moreover, I will have cleaned out all of my doubt, all of my prevarication, and all of my timidity. The left-hand page is a recursive page. Each verso becomes a recto as soon as ink and paper are applied. Each left-hand page generates one right-hand page and an infinite number of left-hand pages. If you think about it, right? So, what is withheld multiplies. The left-hand pages accumulate with more speed and intensity than right-hand pages. The left-hand page is chronic. That is to say, they are always present, occurring, intrinsic and incurable, and unfailing and uneasy, and like freight. The freight of withholding, gathered over years, becomes heavier and heavier, indefinite and unbound weight. There are bales of paper on a wharf somewhere, at a port somewhere. There is a clerk inspecting and inspecting. She is the blue clerk. She's dressed in a blue ink coat. Her right hand is dry, the left hand is dripping. She is expecting a ship. She is preparing for one, though she is afraid that by the time the ship arrives, the stowage would have overtaken the wharf. The sea off the port is roiling some days, calm some days. Up and down the wharf, she examines the bales, shifts all left-hand pages to the back, making room for the swift, voluminous incoming freight. The clerk looks out sometimes over the roiling sea or over the calm sea, finding the horizon, seeking the transfiguration of a ship. The bales have been piling up for years, yet they look brightly scored, crisp and sharp. They have abilities the clerk is forever curtailing and marshaling. They are stacked deep and high, and the clerk in her inky garment weaves in and out of them, checking and rechecking that they do not find their way into the right-hand page. She scrutinizes the manifest hourly, the contents and sequence of loading. She keeps accounts of cubic meters of senses, perceptions, and resistant facts. No one need be aware of these. No one is likely to understand. Some of these are quite dangerous. And some of them are too delicate and beautiful for the present world. There are green unclassified aphids, for example, living in these pages. The sky over the wharf is a sometimes sky. It changes with the moods and anxieties of the clerk. It is ink blue as her coat, or gray as the sea, or pink as the evening clouds. The sun is like a red wasp that flies in and out of the clerk's ear. It escapes the clerk's flapping arms. The clerk would like a cool moon. But all the weather depends on the left-hand pages, all the acridity in the salt air, all the waft of almonds and seaweed, all the sharp, poisonous odor of time. The left-hand pages swell like dunes some years. It is all the clerk can do to mount them with her theodolite to survey their divergent lines of intention. These dunes would envelop her as well as the world if she were not the ink-drenched clerk. Some years, the aridity of the left-hand page makes the air dusty, parches the hand of the clerk. The dock is then a desert. The bales turn to sand, and then the clerk must arrange each grain in the correct order, humidify them with her breath, and wait for the season to pass. And some years, the pages absorb all the water in the air, becoming like 400-year-old wood, and the dock weeps and creaks, and the clerk's garment sweeps, sodden through the bales, and the clerk weeps and wonders why she is here and when will the ship ever arrive. I am the clerk, overwhelmed by the left-hand page. Each blooming choir contains a thought, selected out of many reams of thoughts and vetted by the clerk, then presented to the author. The clerk replaces the file, which has grown to a size unimaginable. I am the author, in charge of the ink-stained clerk pacing the dock. I record the right-hand page. I do nothing, really, because what I do is clean. I forget the bales of paper fastened to the dock, and the weather doesn't bother me. I choose the presentable things, the beautiful things, and I enjoy them sometimes, if not for the clerk. The clerk has the worry and the damp thoughts and the arid thoughts. The clerk goes balancing the newly withheld pages across the ink-slippery dock. She throws an eye on the still sea. The weather is concrete today. Her garment is stiff like marl today. When Borges says he remembers his father's library in Buenos Aires, the gaslight, the shelves, and the voice of his father reciting Keats's Ode to a Nightingale, I recall the library at the roundabout on Harris Promenade, San Fernando, the library near the Metro Cinema and the Woolworth store. But to go back, first, when my eyes lit on Borges's dissertation on poetry, I thought I had no library, and I thought it with my usual melancholy, and next, my usual pride in being without. And the first image that came to me after that was my grandfather's face with his spectacles and his weeping left eye and his white shirt and his dark trousers and his newspaper and his mustache and his clips around his shirt arms and his notebooks and his logbooks. And at the same moment that the melancholy came, it was quickly brushed aside by the thought that he was my library. In his notebooks, my grandfather logged 100 weight of copra, pounds of chick feed and manure, the health of horses, the nails for their iron shoes, the acreages of heliconia and yams, the depth of 2 rivers, the length of a rainy season. Then I returned to the Harris Promenade and the White Library with the wide steps, but when I inquire, there was no White Library with wide steps, they tell me, but an ochre library at a corner, an ochre library with great steps leading up. What made me think it was a White Library? The St. Paul's Anglican Church anchoring the promenade, the colonial white courthouse, the gray-white public hospital overlooking the sea. I borrowed a book at that white library once, even though the library as I had imagined it did not exist. A book by Gerald Durrell, namely My Family and Other Animals. I don't remember any other books I brought home, though I remember a feeling of quiet luxury and a desire for spectacles to seem as intelligent as my grandfather. I ended up having spectacles. And I read here, too, in this white library, a scrap about Don Quixote and Sancho Panza, though only the kind of scrap, the kind of refuse or onion skin they give school children in colonial countries about a strange skinny man on a horse with a round sidekick. The Oka Library on Harris Promenade was at the spot that was called Library Corner, and it used to be very difficult to get to because of the traffic and the narrow sidewalk, but I was agile and small, and I thought I was ascending a wide, wide-stepped library. And I remember the square clock adjacent to the roundabout. My grandfather, with his logbooks and notebooks, lived in a town by the sea. That sea was like a liquid page to the left of the office where my grandfather kept his logs and his notebooks with their accounts. Apart from the depth of the 2 rivers, namely the Iguana and the Pilot, he also noted the tides, and the times of their rising and falling, and the rain, the number of inches, and its absence. He needed to know about rain for planting and for sunning and drying. And too, he kept a log of the sun, where it would be at what hour, and its angle to the earth in which season. And come to think of it, he must have logged the clouds coming in. He said that the rain always came in from the sea. The clouds moving in were a constant worry. I remember the rain sweeping in, pelting down like stones. That is how it used to be said. The rain is pelting down like stones. He filled many logbooks with rain and its types, showers, sprinkles, deluges, slanted, boulders, sheets, needles, slivers, peppers, cumulonimbus or nimbostratus clouds, convection rain and relief rain. Relief rain, he wrote in his logbook in his small office, and the rain came in from the sea like pepper, then pebbles, then boulders. It drove into his window and disturbed his logs with its wind, and it wet his desk. And he or someone else would say, but look at rain. And someone else would say, see what the rain do, as if the rain were human. Or they would say, don't let that rain come in here, as if the rain were a creature. Anyway, my grandfather had a full and thorough record of clouds and their seasons and their violence. From under the sea, a liquid hand would turn a liquid page each second. This page would make its way to the shore and make its way back. Sometimes pens would wash up onto the beach, long stem-like organic styling. We call them pens. What tree or plant or reef they came from, we did not know. But some days, the beach at Guaya would be full of these styling, just as some nights, the beach would be full of crabs, which reminds me of Garcia Marquez's old man with wings, but didn't then, as I did not know Garcia Marquez then. And our blue crabs had nothing to do with him. It is only now that the crabs in his story have overwhelmed my memory. It is only now that my blue night crabs have overwhelmed his story. Anyway, we would take these pens and sign our names and the names of those we loved along the length of the beach. Of course, these names rubbed out quickly, and as fast as we could write them, the surf consumed them. What does this have to do with Borges? Nothing at all. That is not what you meant to say, the clerk says, finally. I walked into the library, and it was raining rain, and my grandfather's logs were there, and the wooden window was open. As soon as I opened the door, down the white steps came the deluge. If I could not read, I would have been drowned. Now you are sounding like me, the clerk says. I am you, the author says.
I thought I could just let you sign books instead. Is that okay?
Okay.
It's a long meeting.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, it's good. It's
okay.
Perfect.
Cool.
You would rather?
No.
Or would you like to take a couple of questions? Okay. All right. Dion has agreed to take a couple of questions, but only a couple. And then there are books at the back, and we will have Dion sit here, and you can sign them. So two, possibly three questions. I hope one of them is about verbs. But I will cede to the students. Ellie.
My question is about verbs.